Hi, and welcome to Matrix Moments. Avi, thanks for doing this one. This is on marketplaces. Marketplaces are actually bouncing back really strongly and doing much better than traditional offline industries. So I think it's a good time for us to revisit what we know about marketplaces and what we think will change going forward. Let's perhaps start from the basics. What are the different types of marketplaces out there? And how should a founder think about which model, which marketplace model is right for their market?
Rajinder, good to be back again. Who knew that we would be sitting here doing this stuff still in work from home? And you know, you mentioned that it's overall a good time for marketplaces. I think marketplaces have evolved a lot. But in the post-COVID era, everything is a marketplace, right? By definition, if you can't meet and you're going to meet virtually, you know, Zoom is becoming a kind of a marketplace with business getting transacted. But let's back up. Before we start, I think this is a topic where our role is to help founders by bringing together stuff that's already out there. I don't think you, or I know you have done a lot of work on this, I've done a lot of work. I don't think we'll have new dramatic insights, but hopefully our non-incremental contribution to the community is that we have brought it all together. We'll see if we can publish a blog post around it, depending on what people think. And we should absolutely include links and a big shout out and acknowledgement to the guys at A16Z, Andrew Chen, who puts out a lot of stuff on marketplaces, which I have referenced throughout my life, by the way, throughout the career, as well as a bunch of articles out there. I think a lot of people have, Bill Gurley, of course, has been the god of marketplaces, right? So we are, this has been a industry that actually evolves a lot. And we'll talk through some of that, and it evolves pretty fast. And so some of the challenge has just been, you know, track everything, and hopefully this is where we can provide some help. So with that, let's back up. So I came back with Suvi to India to start the equivalent of eBay, right? Believe it or not, there was no term called marketplace. So it was an auction site. The reality is Pierre Omidyar and eBay started the first marketplace in the world. And by definition, it's because it truly brought out the power on the internet. Retail on the internet is just retail offline, but with a different front end and distribution, right? Because you have inventory and stuff. Marketplace actually allows you to connect people across geographies, which never used to happen before, which could not happen before without the internet. So we started Bazi. We started struggling about maybe a couple of years into it. And I still remember using this line internally, saying we need the Amazon user experience on the eBay business model. That's what a marketplace is. A marketplace is now, I mean, obviously we'll talk about thin stack versus full stack, but it's more that kind of thought. And at that point, started seeing Amazon actually start launching its own. At that time, it used to be called the Amazon Marketplace. Today, Amazon is a marketplace. In those days, there used to be Amazon and there used to be Amazon Marketplace where third parties would go. So can you imagine like where the evolution has come? So that's kind of the background. Now let's define some terms, and a year from now, there'll be new terms. So marketplaces evolved like we saw with Bazi, this challenge of fulfilling transactions, customers wanting a certain user experience. eBay, Craigslist type of marketplaces were traditionally thin stack marketplaces. Craigslist being the thinnest stack, right at the top, lead generation. eBay a little bit more with later on adding payment, but earlier there wasn't even payment, right? But a little bit more in terms of verifying sellers. Then it became what we had to do at Bazi, which today Amazon does. Every seller is verified, every good is rated, payments move through the system. We then still go into warehousing and logistics, which is the FBA, fulfilled by Amazon. So basically, all thin stack marketplaces realize that you cannot deliver a user experience that users want without going a bit deeper into the stack, and therefore full stack. Now, most people use the term managed marketplaces to mean full stack marketplaces. I don't, like, but I'm no authority. My view is managed marketplaces also manage at different levels. Some will do warehousing, some will, but they basically, the biggest thing they do is they do something incrementally or non-incrementally differently to deliver a better user experience. And that comes with taking on some risk. And the extreme example of that is BP and some of these new marketplaces, which are full stack managed marketplaces. They take on, they'll buy a car from you and then try to. Now, look at the amount of risk BP took. It's gone out of business right now. So that's how the, so full stack versus thin stack. Evolution as eBay and classifieds, which were which later on called got called thin stack, which over a period of time became full stack, aka managed marketplaces. There's another twist to it now, and it's called market networks. And we'll come to one more criteria, which is three-sided versus two-sided. But market networks are where you're providing some kind of a software or workflow solution into a managed marketplace. And it can also be your Trojan horse to get into the sector. So Practo could be one of them. Open Table at one point became one of them. So this is the latest thing where I think if best way to think about it is if Facebook were to launch a marketplace, right? You have people, you have their networks that you are playing on. And if Facebook were to provide some kind of identity management tool, right? Then it would become that. It would become a market network. I think most complex services will become market networks. So you can imagine an architect, which is why Practo, you know, doctor uses Practo's SaaS solution. It's kind of a Trojan horse, is able to connect patients and you provide the whole experience. So full stack, thin stack, market networks. Final one, three-sided versus two-sided. Most of the stuff we see is actually a two-sided marketplace. But three-sided is much more powerful, right? Look at Instacart. Instacart has customers, it has couriers, and it has the Walmarts and wherever they do the shopping.
That's grand.
If in our portfolio, we have Park Plus, right? Park Plus has whoever owns the real estate of the parking, it has the consumers, and then the companies or the brands or the malls or whoever wants to partner. We have one in Foxy, which does artists, these beauty brands, and of course, consumers. Three-sided marketplaces are harder to start, but they are the ultimate moat, right? So I think this is the overall classification. I think this sets the stage for some of our discussion. But that's kind of the lay of the land.
No, fantastic. I think very it out. Also, in terms of just evolution, it sounds like the world started with thin stack, moved towards managed marketplace, and now increasingly market networks and three-sided marketplaces are actually where the models seem to be evolving, but more specific to certain industry types. So very, very helpful. If I have to just, you know, double click on one of those, I would say, you know, maybe an example is, you know, there are some marketplaces, like for example, say Ola, where actually there are, you know, different models even within the same company. Do you have a view on, you know, when someone is picking a marketplace model, whether that model is the absolute model or whether, you know, for different segments of the market?
It's a great point, and which is why I said, I don't believe, it's actually a very good question you've asked. That's exactly the reason I don't believe full stack and managed are the same thing. Ola, where Ola owns its cars, is leasing them out to the drivers, is a full stack marketplace, right? Now, a real full stack marketplace, which is a consumer brand, would be like Meru, where Ola would actually, this is a great example, book my cab, which would just get you, or get my cab, which would be the thinnest stack. Meru is the fullest stack. They own their cars and they pay their driver salaries, right? Yeah. Now, Ola has that piece of the business, but they have done a spin on that. They own the cars, but they pay the drivers on usage, right? So which is why, to me, that is really the full stack. But the Ola cars, the other 70-80% of Ola cars we see on the road, that is a managed marketplace, but it's not full stack. Yeah. Because the drivers own the cars, which is why I think there's a nuanced difference between full stack and managed marketplace. And it comes down to how tightly do you own your supply and how do you incentivize your supply? I think that's the net, because all of this is about supply. What is the right answer? I think over a period of time, you will have all of these elements. How would I start? I would start full stack and move to managed, right? because ultimately that's what will get you scale.
Yeah.
But they do coexist.
No, okay, clear. I think, you know, this is actually quite exciting. It, now suddenly there are like dozens of marketplace models that seem to be, you know, become feasible with basis this, you know, framework. At its core, it sounds like, you know, marketplaces serve a user need by connecting buyers and sellers. And it's very feasible to do that by, you know, aggregating supply and, you know, you have, you know, the makings of a marketplace, you know, to go with, right? But how do you know if you actually have PMF in a marketplace? And or put another way, like what characteristics of a marketplace actually makes it a successful marketplace or an attractive marketplace to possibly invest or start and scale?
Yeah. So, you know, leading up to this, I actually thought a lot about this, which I hadn't thought before. Earlier, if you had asked me, very simple answer. Generate incremental income for supply. That, and then you'll attract supply. If it is differentiated, you'll attract demand. But if you think deeper, when eBay started, they actually created, and Meg Whitman, who was the CEO at the time, and Pierre used to say that we created incremental GDP because you had collectors of artistic items, whatever, who were not trading with each other before.
Mm.
Right? This trade was not happening in the economy. This spend wasn't happening in the economy. I think that's the ultimate marketplace. If you can generate income, incremental income for supply, and if you can generate incremental spend from demand. And I asked you this question earlier, like, do we even have examples of that? It's very, very hard, but let's do the contra examples. Ola, great incremental income for supply, but it is 70-80% substitutive of my spend, whether I'm spending on car or on public transportation. Airbnb, outstanding supply, largely substitutive. Now, one could argue is the frequency, like you have said, maybe frequency goes up, maybe amount of spend goes up. People travel more because they can do Airbnb. Tarun was making the same argument. But wouldn't it be amazing if both sides were incremental?
Yeah.
And
think of a few examples. I think, you know, one that comes to mind is obviously EdTech, which seems to have really exploded because there's just I guess the best way to look at it is, you know, there is, you know, new consumption because of availability or discovery. So in the India context, it could be students sitting in, you know, tier 2, tier 3 cities who don't have access to, you know, high quality teaching and, you know, therefore, you know, basically learn from school and maybe they do a few tuition classes, but, you know, it doesn't really serve the purpose. But and then they drop out. But because of EdTech and, you know, technology, they're able to actually access really high quality teachers from, you know, the best best cities, right, or top cities. And so that actually creates consumption which didn't happen before. You went to school, but, you know, kind of never did anything meaningful after school. The other option is maybe increased frequency of consumption. I can think of, you know, some categories. Content is a great example, right? Which is, or even music. I think all of us, you know, listened to music before. All of us, you know, watched movies before. But when, you know, when it comes to, say, Spotify or Netflix or, you know, Gaana or, you know, all these similar models, just the ubiquity, you know, mobile form factor, high quality content, the independent artists, the long tail discoverability of the long tail. I think the increased frequency of consumption.
Imagine that, right? So it was, you and I were chatting, it's I don't, you know, Spotify's decided to shut down its independent artists, but that's kind of the perfect one, right? Incremental income for the independent artist. And there's always a guy who likes that kind of music and they are willing to spend incrementally. So I think it would be ultimate. So just stepping back, when do you know you have PMF? I think it has all been supply driven so far. Everybody has been looking at supply as the biggest way to get this. I think the difference that will need to happen is 10x demand. And you know, while we were thinking about it, we had this Bill Gurley's tweet where he said it's all about demand aggregation. And I don't think people have paid enough attention. People generally aggregate the supply and because it's incremental income, but then they struggle to scale the marketplace after some time. So you have to get the demand side. Can you create a 10x experience? And don't think consumer brands think like that, marketplaces don't. Mm-hmm. And I think if there's one takeaway, like it has changed my own thinking that I would want to have that 10x demand experience. And Goat versus eBay is a great example. Goat is a matrix US investment, high-end sneakers. they give you money back guarantee. They inspect the damn sneakers. They send it to you. My son has made me buy something on it. High AOV, very high satisfaction. So I think ultimately, supply incremental income, everybody has been talking about. But you have to have it with 10x happiness. Again, I think one of the terms used in by one of these guys, 10x happiness on the demand side. And then can you make money doing that?
No, super helpful. I think, yeah, most of the conversations tend to be around supply. So agree with you that not enough conversations are happening around demand. You know, just picking up from there, if I have to like actually distill, you know, and measure some of this, right? I think we're familiar with, you know, cohort analysis and stuff like that. Is that the best way one should measure marketplaces? And, you know, is that the, you know, framework one should use to kind of distinguish between, you know, a normal kind of internet business is worth versus really a marketplace on fire?
Yeah, you make it sound like it's an abnormal business, but yes, it is. So let's separate the usual metrics, so to speak, and then the unusual, abnormal marketplace specific metrics. So cohorts on both sides, I'm not going to belabor, we have covered it everywhere. Specific to marketplace, incremental income on the supply side and how is it increasing? Now remember, let's take a Ola driver. If he was a driver with me or you or anybody else, he would be getting annual increases in salary. In marketplace, you want to get all these people going, and if a lot more supply comes on, this guy's income is decreasing year over year. It doesn't even keep up with inflation. So it is extremely critical to look at your most loyal supply cohorts and see is the income generation curve increasing or not. And you can match supply and demand in a marketplace, which I think Ola has done a fantastic job, where for your most loyal supply, that's what you're measuring. Income keeps increasing year over. Obviously your buy side demand has to increase also, but you have to kind of channel it here. Coming back to the 10x experience, if it is truly 10x experience, my GMV cohort should go up. The buyers buying, at least in value for the cohort, should keep going up. Most marketplaces don't measure it. And actually, I don't think I've ever made it a big deal. But if the marketplace has to become massive, it has to happen. Look at Amazon now. Amazon is the ultimate marketplace. And our spends on Amazon, that cohort, I mean, that's why Bezos is the richest man on the planet.
Stock is 50% in the last three months. Like crazy.
So marketplace specific, marketplaces by definition will do well if they are fragmented, not if they are concentrated. You need to measure fragmentation or concentration of your supply base. What is the Pareto? Is 5% generating 95% of your sales? You are highly exposed. You have a flank exposed. Somebody can come and get it. You have to flatten the curve. You have to get 30-40% of your seller base generating most of your sales. And also on the buyer side should be flat. Otherwise, it's too concentrated and anybody. And frankly, network effects and all of that won't really come into play. It's just it's a very tight marketplace. I have a great measure, I think, of network effects. See, we all talk about cohorts. And when I'm saying it, it looks like a horizontal cohort. If network effects, which are defined as every incremental buyer or seller adds value to the increment to the existing buyer or seller, that is happening, you have to look at vertical cohorts, vertical retention, which is as I'm going by month, I am seeing that my new users are getting retained more in the first, second, third month because they are seeing more value. Yep. And I don't think anybody does that. Right? So I think you can actually measure network effects.
Sounds like it's as simple as just transposing what everyone else is looking at. Just the horizontal cohort transposed is like the vertical cohort.
No. Vertical cohort is not. Vertical cohort is M1 of your different months has to go up.
Yeah.
So if the first month was 25%, if the second is 25, most of us will say, "Acha, 25 is going to 20. This is good, and it's staying steady." But if 25 is going to 28, is going to 32, is going to 40. In the M1 with each passing month, for that, you know, that new user, it is telling you that user is deriving more value. Right? So the vertical cohort in the same representation. Marketplace specific, are sellers and buyers swapping their roles? Now, Uber, Ola type of model generally don't have that happen. But eBay absolutely did. And I don't know, like Spotify, which is where I'm struggling with some of these things to say, what are examples of marketplaces that do that? Airbnb for sure. The issue is not just the numbers. The issue is if you are trying to provide a world-class buying experience or a world-class selling experience, when that seller becomes the buyer, he knows what the experience is. That self-improvement curve will kick in. Loop will kick in where they'll start improving their experience. One very interesting one I learned while researching this, multi-tenanting. Classic Ola versus Uber issue. What percentage of your users is on other platforms? Right? And can you increase their switching costs? So if you're sending them the most profitable customers, it takes their switching costs up. And most people are not doing that. NPS, we have discussed. You know that one of our favorite new numbers is the Sean Ellis test, habit forming, which we should include as a link. How much would you miss it if it wasn't there? And I think marketplace specific, there is a take rate. Is that take rate? If that take rate is less than 20%, you're not adding much. My view is, I would like to see marketplaces that make 30 to 40% take rate. And then the gross margin of that take rate. And if that is not 70, 80% and you're doing too much work to get that take rate, I don't think it's an interesting commercial business. And finally, remember that you're acquiring buyers and you're acquiring sellers. So you have to look at LTV to CAC on both sides. So I think there's a lot of metrics here, but hopefully we'll summarize it also in one of the
do something later offline, as you suggested, if people want it. I think the one term which we've also used is liquidity internally, and I guess up until a certain point, you had said that full stack makes sense because maybe it's partly to create the customer experience, partly also to create the liquidity on the marketplace. But it sounds like there is some kind of a tipping point where the network effects actually just kicks in, and there's the supply showing up, there's demand showing up, and this loop kind of like you're describing keeps kind of helping the marketplace grow. Is there a way to think about about that tipping point? How do you get there faster? When does it start? Have I reached it? How do founders know?
Yeah. Well, if you and I actually knew how to do it, we would be running a marketplace and targeting Bezos' wealth. But see, the reality is hard, so we can share some tips. You can do liquidity. So network effects, like you said, we just discussed how you can potentially measure, but network effects cannot come without liquidity as a starting. Liquidity can be hacked. That's the good news. So going back to the Bazi days, me personally, Suvir, we used to seed the supply. Typically, liquidity hacking starts by seeding some unique supply where you think 10x to pata nahi hoega ke nahi, but 1.5, 2x, 3x experience is happening on the buyer side, and at least you get the flywheel working. We used to go to Fashion Street and all kinds of places in Bombay, take actual pictures ourselves, upload it on the internet, then go and advertise it to the buyer saying, guys, come, unique stuff over here. So I think there is some liquidity hacking. Sometimes you have to basically going back to Paul Graham's things that don't scale. Absolutely, you have to do that to get the hacking going, right? Or you can take the open table market networks approach, Trojan horse, reservation system, same with Practo, get it going in that way and then add the marketplace on top. The third way, which I learned from Meg Whitman, had actually put this up on eBay. She used to make us, as in the company, the category managers, track null searches. So there's a demand, but there's no supply. And you typically have category managers, and those category managers will go then try to get that supply. Because all you're doing is trying to increase liquidity and do the matching, right? Because by the way, we didn't discuss in the previous metrics one, but matching is very critical. At Ola, we used to track stockouts. Then you have to put in the heat map. So you can actually automate liquidity. And the best way to do it is if you have a e-commerce or services marketplace, open up that dashboard to your sellers, suppliers, saying there's no supply here. Why don't you get this supply, right? So I think you can hack your way to it. I'll tell you the biggest learning for me, at least in network effects, is be be careful whether you have real network, whether you have scalable network effects or asymptotic network effects. So if you have a commoditized marketplace, let's take a classic cab hailing. Whether you get a cab in 3 minutes or 7 minutes doesn't change it, because it's a commoditized supply. If you look at a complex supply like Airbnb, each new type of a different property is not a commodity. It actually adds to the platform. So that's the trick there. But I think that's the way, in my view, to hack your way to supply side liquidity, which ultimately will get you network effects, hopefully. Measure your network effects the way we discussed with vertical cohorts, but then be wary. How are your network effects increasing with scale or actually asymptotic with scale?
Yeah. Sounds like if you get this right, that actually, you know, it's very hard to, you know, compete with you. And I guess there are examples out there. Amazon is
and
next.
Therefore, Amazon.
Amazon, yeah. Right?
For Amazon, because how do you, when that whole flywheel is working, right? I don't know if Amazon today, if you ask me, and we'll have a separate video cast on moats, because that's the other thing I've been thinking very deeply about. I don't know if Amazon today is really network effects or is it really economies of scale, right? It sounds more like economies of scale because each incremental seller is not adding. I think Airbnb is still a powerful, very powerful real network effect play. But then if you look at that from, you know, before this COVID thing happened, I heard that booking.com was coming straight into their market and Airbnb was going straight into the other market. Yeah. So there is no ultimately passage of time. How many companies in S&P 500 that were there 20 years ago are there today, right? So you have to just be very nimble. I heard Airbnb is trying to buy out hotels, or at least they were going full stack. You would have these Airbnb branded experiences where you would go straight in an Airbnb property, right? So, and booking is trying to come this way. So it is, I think if you get it right, it's very hard. It creates billions of value, but you're still not done.
I think since you were very close to it, maybe also just on the eBay versus Amazon example, I think from your personal journey.
I think it was a 10x experience issue, Rajendra. The eBay business model didn't allow for a 10x experience. You would buy, and especially in India, which is why we moved. We were a marketplace. We were not eBay. Auctions were 5% of our sales by the time eBay bought us. 95% was what was called fixed price delivery model. We had to go integrate with the logistics companies. I think the net of it was just the experience. It didn't scale. You would buy an electronics item. You would go back and forth with the seller. You would have to figure out offline mode of payment. Just the friction points in that Instack marketplace doesn't work. Which is why I think one takeaway for founders from this discussion is don't forget the 10x user experience. If you generate incremental income for supply, you will have a great head start. You will have an interesting business, but you're exposed. Somebody who provides 10x experience for that same item will win that. And Goat actually is a great example. So each of eBay's verticals keeps getting taken off by some guy who comes in with this 10x experience.
Is this 10x experience also your best defense against leakage? Because leakage is also an issue that marketplaces probably have to contend with.
Yeah, you know what? So, probably, but I'll tell you, this I learned from Pierre Omidyar and I always remember it. So I used to, and I think you would think it's no surprise, I used to spend a lot of time personally as the founder thinking about plugging leakage. Kahan se nikal raha hai, idhar karo, usko maro, idhar danda maro. And it obviously used to end up towards the supplier side. If you're pissing off a supplier, what do you think they'll do to the buyer? Right? Then Pierre said that marketplaces, again, it wasn't marketplace, I think he said community. He used to use the word community, right? This is a community. And he said community is not a dictatorship. Community is a democracy. And in democracy, things are flawed. I still remember that. And he said, if you have 98-2, 99-1 approach to leakage, and just to define leakage, it is a seller transacting with a buyer without involving the marketplace,
okay.
Right? Now, again, going back to that, can happen in commoditized marketplaces more versus a unique special supply each time. So he said, if you do that, your marketplace will choke. Your community will choke. Let 1,000 flowers bloom. Let it be 80-20. Let 20% leave. Because what happens is, this we figured out later, a seller will come on the platform, see income, get excited. Then especially in India, be very entrepreneurial, say, isko kaise bypass karein abhi? Then we'll bypass the marketplace. Then realize that there's a lot of headache. They are having to deal with the buyer. There's no support from the marketplace in terms of going back and forth. They start losing incremental sales because some other seller has come. These guys are not. Remember, on Amazon also, the higher rated you are, the more sales you get. If you bypass the platform, how do you get ratings? Right. So, although, by the way, as an aside, Indian sellers were extremely entrepreneurial. They would bypass, then do a 1 rupee transaction on the site from the with the same buyer to get a rating. So I was like, and then of course I found that. So we were trying to plug that hole, but whatever. So I think the larger point is net some leakage is good. It's a democracy. It makes the overall platform grow. It's less stress. The platform is not under stress, and it lets the better part of the human spirit come into play. And then that seller who kind of has bypassed you, made some money, realized it doesn't work. Actually, when they come back, they are the most loyal.
No, this is super helpful. I was also thinking that if I just look at the history of marketplaces, obviously, web-based marketplaces were, you know, where marketplace models started, and then call it a little over a decade ago, the mobile marketplace models kind of took off with smartphone adoption. No. Everyone is searching for this next big platform evolution, and I was wondering, you know, whether you had any views on video, because it seems like with Zoom, with, you know, this crisis, like everyone is now just basically, and of course, you know, infrastructure with 4G, everyone has now just gotten more accustomed to being online on video. Is it time for video kind of become the new platform and for more video-led marketplace models to really emerge?
Yeah, I mean, you should win because you have a view on it. I could argue it both ways, because a lot of the elements of marketplaces are built into or structured to get over this in-person interaction, right? And sometimes people prefer that. But in China, live streaming with video is also, you know, resulting in more marketplaces. So you're right. I think COVID sadly has definitely been an inflection point for video. I am also wary that it is actually a commoditization of video point. Everybody needs to have. It's table stakes, right? But how do you build an experience on top of that? I don't know. Could it be the next big thing? For sure. Remember, we thought about multilingual and audio being a format that would make these things. Multilingual is a challenge because, you know, different people can't communicate. We thought maybe audio will take it to the next level. It didn't. But video probably has a better shot. But I know you have thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think maybe it's also a China-specific thing. But we have been seeing some of these China models just take off. And I guess their you know, media and content ecosystem is also quite different. And, you know, there are these live streamers who have actually made it, you know, very big on multiple social platforms. And I guess that when married with marketplaces, what they realized was for a lot of long tail categories, say in fashion or in, you know, beauty or gemstones or, you know, multiple other categories, there is a role of a seller to actually sell beyond just, you know, the selection, the price, and maybe the, you know, reviews and ratings as well. There is a role that a influencer can actually play in communicating.
That influencer piece is very critical.
So, you know, India doesn't have that ecosystem today. Still very early. We've seen some companies try to do it. But it's a bit of trying to create this influencer ecosystem and, you know, on top of video, all things kind of trying to happen simultaneously.
Yeah.
I do think that there is a role for this model to come through in India, but perhaps it's a little early for it as well. But I mean, I guess we're back.
I think one takeaway I want all the founders to have is that this is, in my view, if I had to, you know, we often do this, if I had to start a company or if I had to think like a founder, I think the incremental income for the supply is table stakes. I think the 10x experience on demand is one big takeaway and focus. And the second, and that may, by the way, come through this video model, may come through influencers, I don't know. And then this piece that, are you unlocking incremental spend? And how can you unlock incremental spend? We are just human beings. Human beings worldwide are, in my view, all the same. They live in it. Their economic development is at a different, at different level. So their place in the Maslow's hierarchy is different. And if one can think through what are the untapped spends, like I'll give you a very random, it's not implementable, space travel. It is, it will create new spend. It can't be a marketplace, but that's where the thought has to be. Where is that? There are so many rich people in the world. And I think it will be on the top of the Maslow's hierarchy, somewhere on the top, because you're trying to unlock new spends. Or if it's in the middle, unmet needs, latent needs. But I would think very hard about it. Say, can I do that with a 10x experience, generating incremental income from a supplier? I think that's the next $100 million company to be created.
Awesome. On that note, Avi, thank you.
One point, Rajendra, we didn't complete was the question often comes whether marketplaces are winner takes all, or whether they are not. And I would say marketplaces are winner takes most. Let's be very clear. And if you are not, you will not do well long. Because if you're not being able to take a disproportionate market share, if you're 50-50, it's not a marketplace. It's a telecom company, it's a utility. Somebody will, you have to think about your moats very differently. People will come in with lower cost base, more capex, do something which will disrupt. If you are a marketplace and you have network effects, by definition, it has to be winner takes all. It's not winner takes all, because we distinguish between commoditized marketplaces where network effects are asymptotic versus specialized marketplaces, what are called heterogeneous marketplaces, where network effects are not asymptotic. Where network effects are not asymptotic, it will be very close to winner takes all.
Yeah.
Where network effects are asymptotic, which are the homogeneous marketplaces, you will see two or three players. Typically two, but likely three. But that will also be 70-30, maybe 60-40, something like that. Or maybe there'll be a third player at 20%. The profit pool will go to the largest ones. It won't be in the share of the market share. It'll be much more to the largest. So.
Thanks, Avi.
Okay, man. Great discussion. I think there is more work for us to do in trying to put this out in some other form. But good to be back and good to see you again.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.